Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore the best way of getting the maximum amount of vitamin C into your body, especially if you have cancer, because new research from the University of Iowa shows that vitamin C kills cancer cells, but only at the high doses. So there's a simple way of doing that. Also from McMaster's University, that's in Canada, couch potatoes face the same chance of dementia as those with genetic risk factors. That's not good. So we've got to explore that. And people with early onset Parkinson's disease may benefit from a boosting niacin element in your diet, and also the importance of glutamine metabolism in colon cancer from Osaka University in Japan, and functional foods from cauliflower help with diabetes and hypertension from Zhenjiang University in China, and also taking a daily folic acid supplement is crucial for preventing birth defects in pregnant women. And from Massachusetts General Hospital study, high dietary red meat intake is linked with a common bowel condition, diverticulitis, and more on health and healing. Also today, Dr. Ben Johnson will share why he is opposed to mammograms for everyone. And then the real reasons why Gaddafi was killed by Hillary Clinton and her mob in Washington. And also today, I'm going to have a discussion on Spaceship Earth. Your main oxygen systems are collapsing. Who says? John Rulak and EchoWatch, I'll share that. And I've been watching some of the comments about in the media about Gee Whiz. The United States is the victim of Russian hacks. In point of fact, there is absolutely no proof of that. There is proof, however, that the United States has undermined 81 countries' elections. We did the hacking, the assassinating, planning coups, funding them, and I'll be specific and give you dates and countries, people involved. But then Paul Street of Counterpunch has an article that I will share with you called Hillary Clinton and the Installation of Authoritarian Right-Wing Regimes in Americas. This is Honduras. This is all about Clinton. And so Meryl Streep, Miss Streep, you're a phenomenal actress. In my personal opinion, the best. And I respect that. Why haven't you shown the same ability to articulate to an audience, a large audience, millions of people, your challenge to President Obama when his drones were decapitating children, the support of a war in Yemen, where if you showed pictures of all those Yemeni children, millions dying of starvation due to our partner, it's our planes, our bombs, our cluster bombs, our illegal phosphorus bombs, that are being used by Saudi Arabia in Yemen. And what about in Libya? What about, and where did you speak up when Libya was destroyed? In Syria? Where was your voice? And the Dakotas and the pipelines? Where was your voice? And genetically modified foods, the march against Monsanto? Where were you? I led a march in New York. I led a march. Two marches, thousands of people from this audience showed up. I didn't see you there. And yet, we all have to eat. Whether you're conservative or liberal, doesn't matter. We all eat. So shouldn't we all have healthy, safe food? And what about the 18 million starving children? Because they're food insecure. They don't go to bed at night with all the nutrients they need to build strong immune systems and bodies. Where's your voice? When 28 million Americans lose their home, where were you to use your celebrity to help bring their plight to everyone's attention and cause a civil disobedience act so that it's very easy to go on television in a form of your peers and make a statement against this dimwit of a president? He's as bad as George Bush. And no one pretends that he's anything other than that. But where were you when you had a Harvard law professor who became the worst president, most dangerous president in American history, who eavesdropped on all your phone calls, every single thing that you have done electronically, the president's spymasters have been aware of? And if those of us who actually are activists, not grandstanding like a Michael Moore, we're actually in line of fire, not just for a photo op or not just to make some relevant statement in that moment, but dedicated. And there's a whole lot of difference between celebrity activists and true activists. There are a few true activists who are celebrities. But I just wonder, where was your voice when all these other things were happening, when stop and search was happening, when the ghettoization of America was happening? How much of those millions of dollars you've made did you dedicate to helping those people? Just a question. Just like to hear that part of it, so that at least you can show that you are as concerned when something in the form of tyranny, fascism, totalitarianism, elitism happens to people of a different political persuasion. Are you as concerned then? Hope so. I'd like to hear from you on that. We're also going to have a look today. Oh, by the way, and a major supporter of Hillary Clinton. Just curious what part of Hillary Clinton you supported. So I'm going to give you something very specific. And please, in the audience, since we have one of the largest audiences in the world and the largest progressive audience in the world, will someone get my commentary about Hillary Clinton and supporting death squads, supporting authoritarian right-wing regime coups, and ask, those who supported Hillary Clinton, do you also support death squads? Do you support a death of children, 500,000 children dead in Iraq? Do you support regime change? Do you support killing union members? You either do or you don't. If you don't, then why would you support her? Or does your sense of scholarship and research stop when it becomes inconvenient to do your homework and research? We'll get to that later. So we have a lot to share today. Oh, and by the way, to put the cherry on top, we're going to have John Perkins, the only man that I'm aware of personally who was an economic hitman. He went in, he was a part of the team that would go into a country at the behest of a Clinton person in power, and he'd make the president or the premier or prime minister of that country a deal. You give us your assets, whether they're nickel, aluminum, silver, gold, oil, and we'll let you be as corrupt and rich as possible. We'll protect you. If you don't, we'll send in the jackals and we'll kill you. And he gives very specific instances how our CIA, the very people that we're told to believe today, kill people. No one has ever been held accountable in American history if you commit a crime on behalf or at the behest of those in power. That tells you a lot about our sense of laws and justice. So, and for those of you who are listening, you can listen live, 605 over telephone. I'll give you the number, 605-562-5119, 605-562-5119. And if you miss a show and you want to archive it and listen then over any portable listening device, the phone number to call is 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now, we're going to start by taking a look in our health program today at vitamin C. I saw firsthand, as did the medical staff I work with at the Tri-State Healing Center for years and years, how people with end-stage diseases and intermittent diseases, and especially AIDS, 1,200 people with AIDS-defining illnesses, many of them who would have died because they had pneumocystis, carinii pneumonia, they had Kaposi sarcoma, they had massive infections, and it was the vitamin C intravenous that saved them. They had a lot of other things in their protocol, but the vitamin C intravenous vitamin C was key, and they were doing it 4 or 5 times a week. And you could just watch their monthly lab reports. You'd just watch their T cells go up. You'd watch their viral load go down. All these things that are indicators of how a person's recovering and their overall sense of vitality, weight gain, and no more opportunistic infections. Well, vitamin C was the basis of it. And I remember Dr. Cathcart came in from California to see what we were doing, and then he began using 50,000 milligrams intravenous a day and wiping out the number one killer of persons with AIDS at that time. And Dr. Frederick Klenner had only used 50,000. We jumped it up to 200,000. This is the University of Iowa Healthcare. Just today, quote, vitamin C has a patchy history as a cancer therapy, but researchers at the University of Iowa believe that it's because it has often been used in a way that guarantees failure. Most vitamin C therapies involve taking the substance orally. However, University of Iowa scientists have shown that giving vitamin C intravenously and bypassing normal gut metabolism and excretion pathways creates blood levels that are up to 500 times higher than the levels seen with oral ingestion. It is this super high concentration in the blood that is crucial to vitamin C's ability to attack cancer cells. Earlier work by University of Iowa redox biology expert found that at these extremely high levels, vitamin C selectively kills cancer cells, but not normal cells, and this was in the laboratory. Physicians at the University of hospitals and clinics are now testing the approach in clinical trials for pancreatic cancer and lung cancer that combine high-dose intravenous vitamin C with standard chemotherapy or radiation. Earlier phase 1 trials indicated this treatment is safe and well-tolerated and hinted that the therapy improves patient outcomes. So that's good. And this was published in the journal Redox Biology. Now, here's one way to also help improve your absorption of vitamin C orally. Most people buy the cheap drugstore brand vitamin C, which is just straight ascorbic acid. When you take ascorbic acid and it hits your stomach where you have hydrochloric acid, there frequently, but not always, is a hyperacidic reaction. That stimulates the bowel to assume that there is something toxic and that can cause diarrhea. However, if you take a better form of vitamin C, ascorbated form, then you take it with a protein shake, you get much higher utilization. You frequently do not have any kind of gastric or stomach distress at all, and you get better tissue absorption. So therefore, take your vitamin C, but instead of taking it alone, just swallowing it down, put it in your smoothie or protein shake, and then test this for yourself. Over a period of a week, take your normal amount. Now, take a little more, and then a little more. And over a period of a couple of weeks, see if you can get up to doubling the amount that you would normally take without any gastric distress or diarrhea by taking it in a smoothie form. Put a banana in there also. That is good to have potassium and vitamin C together, and quercetin. Next up, we have a lot of people who don't exercise. They're very, very sedentary, and that's not good. You should be up and moving every 2 hours for ideal circulation. But couch potatoes have something new to be concerned about. According to a study from McMaster's University, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, sedentary older adults with no genetic risk factors for dementia may be just as likely to develop dementia as those who are genetically predisposed because they are not exercising. They're lazy. So that's important. So get up and move about. And by the way, dementia, there are over 47 million people living with dementia. And I think that will double in the very near future because so many people are seeing the impact of inflammatory reactions on the brain. Now, good news concerning Parkinson's, especially early onset Parkinson's. A team from Leicester University in the United Kingdom, they were studying this and found that niacin, that's also vitamin B3, found in a variety of foods, including nuts, and also niacin boosts the level of NAD compound in the body for energy generation and DNA repair. Anyone that I see who has clearly had some DNA damage from diet, from environmental exposure, from viruses, from trauma, I always make sure that they're taking NAD because that's the one nutrient we know will repair DNA, which is critical for keeping the mitochondria in shape. And so this study showed that niacin makes a big difference. It can help you with early onset Parkinson's. Also, another study, and that is that when you are exercising, always make sure that you take your vitamin C before and then after. It can trap free radicals, and therefore you won't get the oxidative stress and the oxidative damage from not taking the vitamin C. So you get the benefit of the exercise, but none of the downsides. And a new study out of Osaka University, the importance of glutamine, gluta, G-L-U-T-A, amine, which means amino acid, A-M-I-N-E, is good to help prevent colon cancer. Well, that's great. And finally, from university in China, functional foods, that means a food that actually carries out functions in the body. And in this case, the food is cauliflower. And from my experience, the best way to get cauliflower is to steam it for about 5 minutes, run cold water on it, and then put it away in the fridge, and then just put it into your salad, and it's great that way. But it lowers hypertension and diabetes, both. And that's terrific. Also, folic acid was shown to help prevent birth defects. And if you're taking meat, red meat in the diet, if you're the average person, it increases your risk of diverticulitis. That's Massachusetts General Hospital. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you. Also, I want to mention that we have put together a brand new website for Progressive Radio Network. We have brought in full-time, after a long search, one of the best people working on websites. And we have new stories, we have new films, free as a public service, about upwards of 100 new stories per day. And we put them in throughout the day and the evening. And we do it based upon people living worldwide. So we try to take on universal issues and then take on the stories that challenge the fake news of the mainstream media. So you have a chance to read that every day. So go to the website and look at all the different new things every single day. And none of it is ever ideological. We don't care about that. We care just about the truth. And talking about the truth, yes, we should be concerned if other countries have been involved in any way trying to influence our election. But then there seems to be a cognitive disconnect here, because we don't need Russia or China or any other country to try to influence our elections. We have super PACs. We have Citizens United. We have billionaires and very wealthy oligarchs like the Koch brothers and Mr. Sheldon, and we have George Soros. We have probably 150 people who are all billionaires, and they have their own idea of who they want to see in power. So they select these people and then expect us to elect them. So that makes a mockery, the idea that someone's influencing our elections. All of our elections are influenced. For example, at the state level, we have ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that no one knew even existed for over 30 years, passing over 25,000 bills into laws at the state level, where they wined and dined your state legislator, helped them, gave them consulting jobs, lobbying jobs after their tenure was over, and also helping support their reelections. No one knew that they were influencing laws, always to their benefit, about 200 to 300 corporations. Then at the federal level, we didn't know how powerful the Council on Foreign Relations was in determining foreign policy initiatives. We didn't know that we had a group of neocons that were permanent fixtures in Washington, supported by think tanks, which were strictly ideological, and using their pedigrees from Ivy League or other schools, or tenures within corporate America, jumping into government and back into private industry, like with Halliburton and all these others. And there are about 200,000 of these corporations and contractors just in the Defense Department alone, not including the energy sector, the medical sector, or the financial sector. So it shows you there are hundreds of thousands of corporations and consultants and lobbyists who do not represent the public's interest, but their own. So all these people are competing to see that they get the advantage and are try to get rid of any pesky rules that would impact them. And they profit and take their profits offshore. They pay very little or no taxes. So, yeah, these people influence elections also. Why don't we show that? But then I want to be specific about how bad is it when it comes to interfering in elections, to show that why isn't this side of the story ever mentioned? I'm going to share some figures from Nina Agarwal of Humans Are Free. And the closest we can come, based upon the Carnegie Mellon University study, the database, is that from 1946 to 2000, on 81 separate occasions, the United States influenced presidential elections in other countries. Now, by the way, this number does not include military coups or regime change efforts following the election of candidates the U.S. didn't like in Iran, Guatemala, or Chile. These acts were successful in 2/3 of the times. That means our people got into power. It was 59% to be exact. Now, Russia does not have clean hands, but Russia attempted to sway 36 foreign elections from the end of World War II to the turn of the century also. And let me get just a few examples, because it's never made the mainstream media. Italy's general election in 1948, the United States simply created the outcome it wanted. Quote, this is from a person who was involved in it. This is from a man named Levin. We threw everything, including the kitchen sink, to beat the communists in Italy. Bags of money to cover campaign expenses, sending experts to help run the campaign, subsidizing pork projects like land reclamation, and threatening publicly to end U.S. aid to Italy if the communists were elected. End quote. Levin said that the U.S. intervention probably played an important role in preventing the country from going the way it wanted. But then again, look at all the corruption that came from the government that they got. Quote, the U.S. Didn't want to see any left-wing governments elected, so it did engage fairly often in trying to influence elections in other countries. In 1990 Nicaragua elections, the CIA leaked damaging information and that hurt the Sandinistas. In Haiti, after the 1986 overthrow of dictator and U.S. ally Jean-Claude Babidak de Valle, the CIA sought to support particular candidates and to undermine, to prevent Jean Aristide, a Roman Catholic priest and proponent of liberation theology. In fact, the New York Times reported in the 1990s that the CIA had on its payroll members of the military junta that would ultimately unseat Aristide after he was democratically elected in a landslide vote over Mark Basin, a former World Bank official and finance minister favored by the U.S. And the United States also attempted to sway Russian elections in 1996 with the presidency of Boris Yeltsin and the Russian economy flailing. President Clinton endorsed a $12 billion or $10.2 billion loan from the International Monetary Fund linked to privatization and trade liberalization and other measures that would move Russia towards a capitalist economy. And Yeltsin used the loan to bolster his popular support, telling voters that only he had the reformist credentials to secure such loans. But of course, anyone who studied Russia at the time knows that Yeltsin was a thief. He was a drunkard. He was not interested in the people. Yet he had all of our support and our money. Now just look at how many dollars the United States has spent in the Middle East to bolster candidates that would further the American agenda there. And then there's in Yugoslavia, the U.S. and NATO had long sought to cut off Serbian nationalist and Yugoslavian leader Milosevic from the international system through economic sanctions, military action. In 2000, the U.S. spent millions of dollars in aid for political parties and campaign costs and independent media and funding of broadcast equipment provided to the media arms of the opposition. All those were decisive factors in electing opposition candidate and Yugoslavian president, according to Levin. Quote, if it wouldn't have been for overt intervention, Milosevic would have very likely have won another term. And I might mention that after the bombing in Yugoslavia, which was catastrophic to the Yugoslavian people, and the International War Crimes Tribunals at The Hague, Milosevic was arrested, brought there, and everyone, including the Clintons, took credit for creating freedom for other countries there. The trouble is, no one paid attention to the fact that he was exonerated. He was found innocent of all those charges. He did not engage in genocide. And yet that made no difference. To this day, they rewrote history, writing him out as a dictator that was engaged in genocide, except all the evidence against him showed he was innocent, and so they claimed him innocent. The trouble is it took so many years for this to happen that when he had a cancer that could have been treated or a heart condition that could have been treated, they refused to allow him treatment for his heart condition, so he died in prison. You wouldn't know that unless you looked at the real history on that. But then I want to be very specific, because if you're going to support someone, which is fine, you can support anyone you want, I'm hopeful that you will do your homework to see what is it about this person that you're supporting. What is their history? What is their background? Have they done good? Is the world a safer place, a better place? Are freedoms manifested where they weren't before? That's what I like to see. So when all these celebrities and all of Wall Street, all of the military-industrial complex, that should tell you something. Everybody in the media was, with few exceptions, were supporting Hillary Clinton. I want to give you a specific example of what you were supporting, whether you're aware of it or not. Let's go back to Honduras in 2009. What is it with Hillary Clinton and the installation of authoritarian right-wing regimes in the Americas? Well, according to Paul Street, 7.5 years ago, She used her position as Barack Obama's first Secretary of State to help the right-wing Honduran military and business class overthrow the democratically elected government of Honduras and the President Manuel Zelaya. Mrs. Clinton did this because she was and remains the most hard-ass, hard-faced, rigidified brain, right-wing, neoliberal demagogue in the history of America. That's what I personally think, and the history shows. And therefore, she naturally opposed Zelaya's shift to the populist left. Interesting, because she kept going to the populist left as if, I'm your savior. No, you're not. There's not a single populist corpuscle in your body. So she was irritated by this opposition to the United States-led so-called war on drugs. Let's just stop for a moment. How reasonable is it to assume that with the most incarcerated people in the world, in fact, we have more than the next two countries combined, and most of those people are in there for nonviolent crimes of dealing in drugs, using drugs, that the war on drugs has been a complete unmitigated disaster, no different than prohibition. That if we really cared about stopping the violence in Honduras or Colombia or Mexico, the last count, and clearly this is not as accurate as it should be, but I had 120,000 disappeared and dead, and I'm sure it's much higher than that, because most of the disappeared are going to be dead because of the drug war, where we, the United States State Department, actually gave arms to the drug cartel, Sinaloa drug cartel in Mexico, one of the major drug cartels, and let them deal on all the drugs they wanted. And they killed people, dealt in drugs, extortion, but they were supposed to give information about the other drug cartels to the State Department. That is one of the most asinine concepts imaginable. Why not just legalize all drugs, set up rehabilitation clinics in all communities, expunge all drug-related crimes unless they're violent, and let them start over, have both psychological and physical treatment centers, and that way you take away the profit, you take away the mystique, you take away the daring do, and then you start an educational program about why we use drugs in the first place, have national discussions, have it in school. Why do people take drugs? Not to condemn people who take drugs or to in any way marginalize them, but to simply explore the realistic reasons most people do and the consequences to this, to their body and to society, to their families, and then try to create a healing process. To me, that makes a lot more sense than look at the countries like Portugal and others that have legalized the use of drugs and look at their crime rate plummet. Death rates plummet, suicide rates plummet, OD rates plummet. So we have the answers, but they're those self-righteous people and those who profit from the war on drugs. And remember, before you answer any issue ideologically, why don't you look at very, very as a mercenary? Who benefits from a war on cancer, a war on drugs, a war on poverty? Who actually makes the money from it? And that's where you have to start your reform, your change. So here's Hillary Clinton, and she opposed legalization. She wanted even more people in prison. In fact, Hillary Clinton caused more people of color to go to prison than any other person in American history. So I've got a question for Ms. Streep and Michael Moore and all the others. Do you have a problem with that? Do you mind seeing a lot of people go to jail, their lives destroyed, their families adversely affected because someone was caught using marijuana? If you don't have a problem with it, fine, then you're in alignment. If you're black, if you're Latino, if you got drugs, you should be in jail, right? That, go on record with it, Ms. Streep. Go on record. Tell us what you believe should be the punishment for someone who deviates from this artificial goddess notion of Hillary Clinton having anything other than a completely mercenary. There's only one reality to the Clintons, the Obamas, the Bushes, to anyone who runs for political office today. These are great white sharks looking for a nosebleed. That's all they are. So because she's a woman, well, being a woman doesn't qualify you any more or any less. What you can do as a woman does. Being black, being gay, this is not a reason we should vote for anyone for anything in power. We should vote for people who are going to look at all people equally, who will be colorblind, and we be unbiased based upon a person's ethnicity, their culture, their religion, their educational standards. You should treat people as sacred beings. But then again, Hollywood's never treated anyone as a sacred being. You're only as good as the prophets from your last movie. So I'm just curious about, do you stand with someone when it comes to putting people in prison? Because that's what the Clintons do, and took them off welfare, and that's what they did. How do you reconcile that? I can't. But then again, I try to live in a world that's neither an existential, philosophically, nor based upon the illusions of the Hollywood glam machine. So here we have Hillary Clinton, and she doesn't want anything to do with Honduras's democratically elected people or its unions or its activists or the women who supported with their lives and lost their lives because they wanted land reform. So she supported, as she has always supported, the tyrants, the dictators, the despotics. She supported Mubarak against the Arab Spring. She supported Saudi Arabia. She supported Bahrain. She supported the first president who was Saudi and Sunni-based, selected in Yemen, in Qatar, in United Arab Emirates, and in Kuwait. All of those she supported. She didn't support one single movement to oust these people until they had been ousted, and then suddenly she shows herself as being a populist. Good luck with that. So she hated the movement towards alliance and cooperation with socialist Cuba and left populist governments in Venezuela, Bolivia, and Ecuador. She disdained Zelaya's efforts to overcome the interrelated problems of Honduran poverty and Honduran inequality and Honduras' long neocolonial subordination to Washington. With at least tacit approval of Mrs. Clinton and her boss, Obama, Zelaya was seized at gunpoint and exiled to Costa Rica in his pajamas. And after this coup, sold on preposterously false legal and constitutional grounds for which Hillary provided political cover, and the new military regime staged a rigged election that placed the clownish, racist, right-wing landowner, Porfirio, what is he called, Pepe Lobo Sosa, in the Honduran presidency, Hillary hailed the farce as free, fair, and democratic election. Yeah, sure it was. Never mind that the election proceeded amidst interim coup president Roberto Micheletti's suspension of basic civil liberties and in a climate of brutal police state intimidation. As Diana Johnstone noted in her book, Queen of Chaos, The Misadventures of Hillary Clinton, quote, the governments of Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Cuba, Ecuador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Paraguay, Spain, Uganda, Uruguay, and Venezuela refused to recognize the results of that election. But Washington was content. President Lobo described his regime as a, quote, government of national reconciliation. And Hillary Clinton praised it as a, quote, resumption of democratic and constitutional government. Code word is, the bastards who were democratic and liberal are out, and our good neo-fascist papal in power who are going to do business with all of our corporations, privatize the assets, are in power. Let the war on drugs continue. So that's what we have. The results were not pretty. What happened afterwards? Murderous paramilitary repression of peasants, workers, trade unionists, feminists, and intellectuals, artists. A deepening of mass poverty, assassination of opposition candidates, expanded corruption and gangster violence, the social cleansing of poor children, a massive flight of unaccompanied minors to Mexico and the U.S. in 2014. The great children advocate, Hillary Clinton, made sure to encourage the closing of U.S. borders to the thousands of children fleeing the vicious regime she was responsible for imposing upon Honduras. So, Meryl Streep, do you support the assassination by paramilitary repression, fully acknowledged and understood by Clinton, look at the emails, of peasants, workers, trade unionists, feminists, intellectuals, and artists? You either do or you don't. Because if you support her, and you do, and you've been at her fundraisings and her events, and you have, then clearly you would have done your homework about how much carnage and death and destruction her husband have caused. Clearly you would have, I'm assuming. So I'd like clarification about what made Hillary worth supporting. 7 years after the Hillary-backed Honduran coup, Mrs. Clinton and the capitalist imperial U.S. deep state that I've talked about on this station many times, where she served, helped place the thin-skinned, megalomaniac, right-wing, quasi-fascist Donald Trump atop the executive branch of the world's most powerful state. As her former Yale Law classmate and former Bill Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich recently noted in a chilling Truth Dig commentary that merits lengthy quotation, he said, "As tyrants take control of democracies, they typically exaggerate their mandate to govern, claiming, for example, they won an election by a landslide even after losing the popular vote, repeatedly claim massive voter fraud in the absence of any evidence in order to restrict voting in subsequent elections, and call anyone who opposes them enemies, and turn public against journalists or media outlets that criticize them all." So those are just some of the things I was interested in knowing, which of those you support, which of those you would challenge, and would you reevaluate based upon having a different perspective? If you're curious at all as to what happened under Hillary Clinton, and does she justify the title of a feminist? Because no feminist I know, and I know a lot of feminists, I wrote a book, one of the most important books ever written on feminism with one of the world's greatest feminists, Barbara Seaman, 1,600 pages, which was a very important book. And Barbara Seaman could not stand her, nor a lot of the others, because she does not represent true feminism. She's an opportunist. So what else happened? For example, how many bombs were dropped on civilians? Just in the last, according to Council on Foreign Relations, which is a pro-bomb anything that is our enemy organization, 26,171 bombs in seven different countries were dropped under President Obama just in the last 12 months. Well, clearly he needs another Nobel Peace Prize, shouldn't he? Once you hit 20,000 bombs and hundreds of thousands of people killed, I'm sure there must be another. The entire Nobel Prize system is just so politicized it stinks. When you give Henry Kissinger a Nobel Prize, when you give terrorists a Nobel Prize, it no longer has any true meaning and legitimacy. So, just some thoughts. I'd like some answers, please. I have over 126 separate accounts on what the Clintons have done since they came to power. And if you'd like to be educated on the truth about the Clintons and the people around them and the deep state and the wealth masters, I'd be happy to share it with you. Again, taking nothing away from the fact I personally consider you America's greatest actress and extraordinarily talented and gifted. My hope is that you would look at the people you support, not just the people that you rightly would challenge. Now we're going to hear from someone who will tell you the reason why Gaddafi was killed, the real reason, keeping in mind the person who caused Gaddafi's death and destruction of Libya, one human being, caused it all. Because that was Hillary Clinton, who the CIA didn't want to do it, and the Defense Department did not want to do it. She wanted to, she got Obama to agree, and NATO then went in and did the genocide. Listen in, please.
Well, more speculation has been raised on the reasons for NATO's intervention in Libya. And as RT's Laura Emmett reports, the organization may have been trying to prevent Gaddafi from burying the American buck.
According to some, it's about protecting civilians.
We must not tolerate this regime using military force against its own people.
Others say it's about oil.
The only reason they're interested with Libya is about the oil. You'd think we'd be in Iraq if the major export there was broccoli.
But some are convinced intervention in Libya is all about currency, specifically Gaddafi's plan to introduce the gold dinar, a single African currency made from gold, a true sharing of the wealth.
It's one of these things that you have to plan almost in secret, because as soon as you say you're going to change over from the dollar to the something else, you're going to be targeted. There were two conferences on this, one in 96 and another one in the year 2000, called the World Mataba Conference, organized by Gaddafi. And everybody was interested, and I think most countries in Africa were keen.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold. The UK has double that, but 10 times the population.
If Gaddafi had an intent to try to reprice his oil or whatever else the country was selling in the global markets and accept something else as a currency, or maybe launch a gold dinar currency, any move such as that would certainly not be welcomed by the power elite today, who are responsible for controlling the world's central banks. So yes, that would certainly be something that would cause his immediate dismissal and the need for other reasons to be brought forth for removing him from power.
It's happened before. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced Iraqi oil would be traded in euros, not dollars. Sanctions and an invasion followed, some say because the Americans were desperate to prevent OPEC from transferring oil trading in all its member countries to the euro.
The UK's gold is kept here in a secure vault somewhere in the depths of the Bank of England. As in most developed countries, there's not enough to go around. But that's not the case in places like Libya and many of the Gulf states. A gold dinar would have given oil-rich African and Middle Eastern countries the power to turn around to their energy-hungry customers and say, sorry, the price has gone up and we want gold. Some say the US and its NATO allies literally couldn't afford to let that happen. Laura Emmett, RT, London.
Now, let's just keep this in mind. Of the 54 countries in Africa, Libya was the wealthiest. Libya had the longest life expectancy, the highest state of literacy. It had the most rights of any Muslim country in the world. In fact, Muslim women there were in every single occupation and frequently were the majority in all the ruling bodies. Libya had more democracy every day than the United States has had in a long time, because everything was done by local committees and local councils that had more power than Gaddafi himself and frequently overruled him in different issues. For example, Gaddafi was against the capital punishment, and they ruled against him at the local levels. If you were married, you got a special bonus. If you wanted a house, it was provided. If you free education, free medical care, no crime, and he was a major element of stopping al-Qaeda and other terrorists from infiltrating his country. And he was the leading country on creating the gold dinar for as an exchange currency in Africa, and had at least six other countries willing to go with him. That would have freed them from the debt peonage by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. That's the reason he was killed. So do the homework. And we destroyed a country. Now it is the hotbed of corruption. And where did all that gold go to? Billions of dollars. Who has it? Not the Libyan people. And we're going to finish off today by, I'm going to do Mammograms Cause Cancer. Tomorrow, I'm going to do John Perkins on what it means to be an economic hitman, going in on behalf of governments and corporations and trying to steal all their assets. And if they don't want their assets stolen, then we just send in the CIA to kill them. And we've done it so many times. But I want to actually document every single one that we know of, who the people were, the circumstance, the date, and we'll do that tomorrow to give you the true story of America's intervention. But right now, Dr. Ben Johnson, a medical doctor, tells you why he's against mammograms.
But I wrote a book for women, The Secret of Health, Breast Wisdom, because we, as a medical society, are giving women breast cancer with our demanding that they get mammograms. Mammograms cause breast cancer, period. So mammograms are not healthy for women. Women should not be getting routine mammograms. Mm. That's crystal clear, published in the peer-reviewed literature. And yet today, if a woman went to her gynecologist or family doc, she would have this shoved down her throat, extreme coercion to go get this mammogram that's causing breast cancer. Mm. It's not saving lives. You have a 4% increased risk of dying if you get mammograms, period.
So the detection technique that we're using, the primary technique for using that we use to detect breast cancer, is causing breast cancer.
Absolutely, it's a terrible test. You know, smashing women's breast and then irradiating with cancer-causing irradiation, and then it's so insensitive for women under 50. It's only like 52% effective, sensitive. That means 52 is pretty close to 50, right?
Yeah.
So about half. That means that half the women that have breast cancer, it would not detect their cancer.
Mm.
That's a terrible test. And so they're a much better test, and yet this is what's still being crammed down women's throats today.
Mm.
Terrible test, causes breast cancer.
And it doesn't detect, it detects 50% and causes cancer. You said there are better options. What better options are there for detecting breast cancer?
Well, there's two better options. If you've got a lump, if you think you've got something, ultrasound is great. It's a test of anatomy. Mammograms are tests of anatomy. Ultrasounds are tests of anatomy. MRIs are tests of anatomy. So if you've already got a lump, you want a test of anatomy. So that would be like an ultrasound, because they can see the lump, they can see its consistency, they can see whether there's calcium in it, and they can look at blood flow, because tumors are going to have increased blood flow. So for instance, the sensitivity of ultrasound is up around 80%. It's much higher than mammograms, and the sensitivity is higher too. But if you're looking about prevention, if you're talking about screening, there's really only one device out there, and that is thermography, an infrared thermal camera. Nothing touches the lady, nothing smashes her breast. There's no cancer-causing irradiation. As we sit here, we are emitting heat in the spectrum called infrared.
Okay.
There's infrared, visual, and ultraviolet. So this is the infrared spectrum of light, which our eyes don't see, but which is very detectable by the cancer. The military developed this so that they could see people sneaking at them at nighttime, and so that they could shoot down missiles and things, because they're producing heat.
Sure, like the night vision goggles.
There you go. Night vision goggles are infrared goggles. So we use this as a medical application to detect hot spots in the breast. Well, long before there was a tumor there, there were cancer cells. Probably 8 to 10 years before there was a tumor, there were cancer cells starting to grow. 2 cells, 4 cells, 16 cells, 144 cells, et cetera, et cetera. And it takes about 8 years until you get to about a centimeter in size for a mammogram or an ultrasound to detect it. Well, that's too late, because that 1 centimeter tumor, about 5/16 of an inch, less than half an inch, is about 1 billion cells. When you get to 1 billion cells, the cancer has already eroded into the lymphatic system and the venous system, and it's shedding cancer cells all through the body. So that's why mammograms, one of the many reasons mammograms don't save lives, it is not early detection. And that's one of the little lies they propagated along. Early detection saves lives. Get your mammogram today.
Right.
Well, that statement's true. Early detection does save lives. It's just that mammography is not early detection. It's too late. And then the cancer-causing radiation. So the long and the short is you're causing much more brain cancer with mammograms than you are detecting.
Okay. And there you have Dr. Ben Johnson telling you why he is against mammograms. I also am against mammograms. I did a documentary on them. I've written several articles on them. And he is correct. Thermography is much safer. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank you all for listening. Tonight, 7 p.m., a really powerful progressive commentary hour. Hope you can check it. Have a nice day, everyone.